From NPR News, this is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. Consumer activist and former presidential candidate Ralph Nader considers himself someone who has always looked out for the underdog. So it came as a surprise to many last week when, before a majority white audience at a fundraiser to retire his campaign debt, Nader referred to himself by using the N-word, saying he felt marginalized by the Democratic Party while trying to qualify for a number of state ballots during his run for the presidency. Nader says he's a wordsmith, and he stands by his use of the controversial word.
Because back in the 50s, during the early civil rights drive, white people involved in that would try to empathize with what it felt like to be black people and be told by political bigots that they couldn't vote, that they couldn't run for office, that they couldn't petition on the streets, that they were being blocked and harassed and intimidated. And I said that the experience that the Nader-Kamejo ticket had, not just in the southern states, but in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio, with the Democrats openly assaulting our candidacy, with corporate Republican law firms filing harassing lawsuits, 21 of them in 18 states, harassing our people on the streets, using political judges to get us off the ballot when we had more than enough signatures, and using the state laws, which are very, very obstructive against third-party and independent candidates, to stifle our right of free speech, petition, and assembly. And I said it made me feel like the N-word. And it's important, I think, for white people to realize that what is going on right now is not just against minorities in certain areas of our country, but against anyone who challenges the two-party dominant system.
Most African Americans, though, who were asked about this, Al Sharpton and many others have suggested that they do not see you as a racist. Al Sharpton said, quote, "Nader is not a racist by any stretch of the imagination," end quote. But there is also the thought, as well echoed by Reverend Sharpton, that that was perhaps at best insensitive to use that word. If you were to do it all over again, would you take that word out?
Yes, I would. I know I would say it all over again because I don't make mistakes verbally like that. I described how I felt. Usually that word is used by political bigots against other people, the way it was used against African Americans, and they were treated savagely and accordingly. But we felt exposed to systematic constitutional crimes against our right to participate in the electoral arena. So it isn't the normal use of that word where it's applied to someone else.
But, Mr. Nader, you understand the concern. People aren't even suggesting that you weren't being treated like an N-word. It's just the concern that that word, particularly for African-Americans of a certain generation, raises the ire of many when used publicly.
Exactly. And when it's used vis-a-vis other people. But when someone who has been exposed to this kind of political bigotry and constitutional crimes uses it to how he felt, then I think it's in a different category.
So let me make sure that I'm clear and we can move on to some other things.
Sure.
You do or do not regret using it?
No,
not
at all.
I do not regret using it at all.
In fact, this is exactly a Jim Crow description of what third-party and independent candidates, when a major party thinks they can be challenged marginally, is willing to do, misusing the law, obstructing, intimidating, and harassing. The more we sensitize the judiciary, Mr. Gordon, to what I think is a similar pattern of discrimination against the right of free speech, petition, and assembly by third-party and independent candidates, the more these judges are going to recognize that voting rights are inextricably related to candidates' rights. One feeds the other or one deprives the other.
What would you say to those African Americans who suggest that you should not have used that word? Even in the context that you are suggesting, what would you say to those African Americans who feel that it is and was inappropriate for you?
Well, I've yet to meet one. In fact, I've had a lot of African Americans, especially those who have experienced this kind of thing recently in terms of trying to get on the ballot and what they're confronting. I have no trouble at all with that word when it's applied to people who are obstructed and denied rights of free speech.
Well, Al Sharpton even suggested that you should not have used it in that context.
Well, I hadn't talked to Al Sharpton. He said you shouldn't sanitize the word, I think is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this isn't your normal use of the word. I'm sure you'll agree that.
I would totally agree with that. I'm just trying to get you to answer what you would say to those rather than say you haven't met any. I've met a number who would say you should not have used that word.
I would say that it's time that we empathized with what minorities have been going through and empathized with what the present system of two-party elected dictatorship is doing to our freedoms in this country.
I see. And you feel that's the best way to bring that?
Well, that was just one way.
I would say to you, though, Mr. Nader, there are going to be a number of African Americans who will not be satisfied with that answer. You understand that?
Well, I'm waiting to dialogue with them. Okay. Maybe we can all focus on opening up the electoral rolls to more people of color.
There's no doubt about that. And I don't think if you juxtapose that with what was said, you're going to get any argument. I think most African Americans would agree and applaud that end of your argument. I mm-hmm. think it's just the use of the N-word, particularly when you were with a majority white crowd. And we understand what you were trying to do in terms of, as you say, the interesting use of it. But perhaps a better descriptive way of doing it might have been more appropriate in the minds of some.
Have you read Randall Kennedy's book with the N-word as the title? Professor Randall Kennedy of Harvard Law School.
I have not read that book, but having lived my entire life as a black male, I don't necessarily have to read that book to know what the N-word means or can do. So,
well, you see, it's because
I'll just go on my existence
I understand. It's becoming a word of defiance in black circles, as you know better than I.
Well, it has become a word of defiance by young people. It certainly was used in the 60s by some. You even suggested that you were using it as a word of defiance as the Black Panthers were. But as we said before, it oftentimes depends on where the word is generated and who says it in terms of the meaning and those who intake it. So let's move to your book now.
Go ahead.
And talk a little bit about the latest book and why you decided to write it. It's called The Good Fight, Declare Your Independence and Close the Democracy Gap.
Because I think, you know, most of us grow up corporate, whether we like it or not, because that's what we're exposed to, all kinds of advertising, all kinds of corporate domination of so many areas of our life, including the commercialization of childhood with video and from junk food to violence, pornography. And until we confront the issue of the corporate domination of our political economy and the subordination of popular sovereignty, everything else that we try to do is going to be blocked. And the corporations, the big ones, not small business, the big multinational corporations are daily engaged in strategic planning of our politics, our government, our elections, the kind of food we eat, the kind of health care we get, what jobs are exported or not exported, whether they're going to pay some taxes or not, with all the loopholes, and even strategically planning our genetic inheritance through Monsanto and patenting life forms and all the rest of it. And I think that this book, The Good Fight, will show parents how the companies are planning through their marketing experts the separation of children from parents, undermining parental authority and selling them often the worst products imaginable for their health, their safety, and their minds, all the way to the details on how the tax system is rigged so middle-income and poor people have to pay more taxes because the giant corporations have reached almost rock bottom in terms of their tax contributions to the federal budget. I found that it isn't enough just to say to people, well, who controls this country? Well, you know, they say big business, so they say the super rich. But it's learning how it's done that gets people's dander up.
Mr. Nader, let me ask you this. You take on a number of issues within the book, the environment, something that you've been dealing with for a long time, disease, hunger,
mm-hmm.
etc. I can recall growing up in Detroit, watching you fight the auto industries for years, the political machine for years. Do you believe this fight, the good fight, is harder to do today than ever before?
Yes, it is. Because, you know, when we were making all these breakthroughs in the 60s and 70s, It was in good part because the labor movement was stronger, and now it's much weaker by all accounts, and because the Democratic Party in Congress had leaders who believed they were sent to Washington to represent people, not big business lobbies. And so those two are now quite different. Labor is very weak. It's struggling to survive. Its numbers are declining, number one, with corporate globalization. And number two, we just don't have a strong Democratic Party. I mean, here's a party that should have landslided the Republicans in 2000, 2004, because the Republicans almost openly stood for business interests against the interests of workers, consumers, the poor. And still, the Democrats have gotten hooked into dialing for the same corporate dollars, and that really paid off for the paymasters who made the two parties converge more and more on issues like corporate power, corporate crime, corporate welfare, foreign policy, military budget, etc. The corruption of money in the Democratic Party in the last 25 years, starting around 1979 when Congressman Tony Coelho taught the Democrats how to raise money from big business like the Republicans do, has collapsed any semblance of two-party competition. So in answer to your question, it is more difficult. On the other hand, the abuses are more blatant and overt and clear to people. I mean, they're losing factories. They're losing jobs. There's more child poverty. Very little crackdown on corporate crime, economic crime, especially in the ghettos, and against investors and 401ks, trillions of dollars in the last 5 years. So people are now more aware. They have to connect that awareness with more and more local organizations.
Well, the book is called The Good Fight, Declare Your Independence and Close the Democracy Gap. Ralph Nader, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon. It's just out in paperback for those who are interested in the bookstores.